Happy Thursday to you. Welcome to yet another in a seemingly never-ending edition of Perspectives here on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom. Thank you so much for tuning in and being part of the action today. And you are always welcome to be part of the conversation, no matter where it might wander. 414, that's with an 850 area code, of course. 850-414-1234 is our local number. If you are an old-fashioned kind of person with a landline phone and you got to call up long distance, well, we make that easy too. 800-926-8809. Email perspectives at WFSU.org or send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. And we are also being broadcast today on Facebook Live. And we welcome you folks there. Which camera is on? It doesn't have red lights like so many of the cameras there. But we do have a very, very special treat for you lined up today.
On the air, everywhere. 101 WIXX Green Bay, Fox Cities, where the hits come to play.
WIXX Green Bay, great American music machine. WKBW. WKBW Radio.
Buffalo.
WKIX Channel 85.
Nothing could be finer than to be in Carolina with WKIX Channel 85.
Yeah, there we go. Now, some of those radio jingles from years ago actually were produced when you were first hitting the airwaves, Ronald J.
Absolutely. That was just like old home.
And we used to have a rocket introduce the news at WOSH in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. An actual rocket. Rocket fast news from WOSH.
I got to ask, now for 17 years you've been on this station, a grand total of somewhat 61 years in the biz. Mm-hmm. Most of the folks I've talked to, though, who are old-time radio guys like you and me, kind of backed into it. Very few people from their earliest recollection said, I am going to be one of those voices on the radio. How did you get into this?
I went to a broadcasting school for about 7 months in Minneapolis, St. Paul. It's just like a trade school, you know. And the programming there was 1940s stuff, Gabriel Heater, Fulton Lewis Jr., and something like that. And you learned to time things out, and you did newscasts, you played records, you had a program where you learned to do pronounce classical names. And it was a pretty good course. And if you got through it for 7 months, they guaranteed they'd get you a job. And I went up with another fellow by the name of Dick Jacobson. Dick flunked out. I got a job at K-Pig in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, serving Cedar Rapids and Marion with tuneful recorded music 19 hours a day. My first job, $1 an hour.
Yeah, but you were not a – now, newscasts were part of the overall programming. And if you were in a small place like K-Pig, you had to do the news.
You had
to play them. You had to do everything.
It's all rip and read. You know, you got AP or UPI wire in the corner, rip and read. You do 2 minutes of news on the hour and half hour from 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. That was my first shift.
Now, how long did you last at K-Pig, mighty K-Pig?
6 months. It's talks about money situation. So I'm there 3 months, and the guy gives me a $10 raise. And I thanked him for the $10 a week raise, and he looked at me, $10 a week? That's $10 a month. Really? So I went back a couple of more weeks, and some guy walked in from another radio station on a Sunday afternoon and offered me another job for more money. And I said, okay, what have I got to lose? You know, I'm free and not married, no kids, nothing, you know. So I took the job. And then I went back to school for a while in Oshkosh and continued to work in radio there. I used to go out and do a 15-minute newscast just for free at 6 o'clock in the evening, you know, get more experience. And then I got an offer for another job, and I left college and ended up in Peoria, Illinois. This is about 1960.
Okay, and but that was, I think, when you had your first major encounter with a breaking national story, right?
Yeah, of course you did everything there, and didn't have much of a news. It was a television station as well, so it had lots of news people going on. We did the Nixon Kennedy returns out of Cook County, Illinois. We all know about that, you know. We're undecided right now who actually won the election. When those votes coming from Chicago Mayor Rick Daley.
Yeah, but between that and what was going on, all the machinations and shenanigans down in West Virginia where Joe Kennedy had dropped so much money there during the final weeks of the push. Mm-hmm. So, still under debate here. Recount did not only occur in Florida then.
Yeah. Then I was there. It was Kerr McGee owned the radio and TV station. They sold it. Kerr McGee Oil Company.
And I think they also made things like boilers for nuclear power plants and stuff.
You're right. Right, they did. Anyway, they sold the station. Now, this is probably the story as it goes along. It's all about the deregulation later, and stations are constantly being sold. And a gentleman wrote me an email, very nice email, about you went to a lot of stations. I said, it's not my choosing. I would have stayed at a lot of these places longer, but they kept changing hands over and over. And new manager would come in, and they'd say, I want to bring this person in or that person in. So from Peoria, I went to San Antonio, Texas, and worked for KITE. You were in San Antonio.
Yes,
about 10 years later.
Yeah, that was a kite, and there was also K-Bat and Kitty and Kono and all of these other acronyms that were part of San Antonio, which is a vibrant radio market, remains so to this day.
Yeah, I was there about 6 months. I think the name I remember as the owner was Connie B. Gay. That sticks with me. Anyway, the government took over the radio station. The federal government took over the station for back taxes. And they brought in a guy who was formerly vice president in charge of news at ABC. So he gets down there, and he's to clean up the station to put it up for sale from the federal government. And he put me in news there. So I was in news about 2-3 years there. And then I got married there, had a couple of kids. And I was offered a job in Fort Worth, Texas, where I became a program director there.
Now, when did you finally hit the realization that, program directing is fun, being a jock, maybe a bit less so, but news was going to be your area of focus?
During a 6-hour Sunday afternoon shift in Fort Worth, Texas, playing the same records over and over and over, I said, I got to get out of this. But it was brought on by another change in ownership. Before I should go on, I should talk to you about W.C. Windsor Jr., who owned the Fort Worth station. This is an interesting character. He was in the Korean War. He's a pilot, and he got shot down over Korea, and he's parachuting out of his plane, and he thinks he's plummeting the ground and instant death, and a gust of wind comes along and pushes him out over a valley, and he's saved. And the word is he's saved.
Ah.
And he got saved ever since. Now, I took over this radio station, and we were a regular music station. He put some Garner Ted Armstrong or something.
Ted Armstrong. Oh, my gosh. Yes, the power of positive thinking.
We started the day with him 15 minutes in the morning. Yeah, the names come back to me. Garner Ted Armstrong. Anyway, so he took it over, and he had this idea that he was going to get this million-watt transmitter, and he actually purchased it, and he put it in a mountain in San Antonio, in Costa Rica. We had these engineers in there. I was the program director. I was going to be the program director of this million-watt transmitter. So we're in the newsroom and a big table there. We got all the maps laid out, And the engineers are showing how the signal will go to Europe and South Africa and here and all like that. And spreading the word, of course, part of the time. The rest of the time, because, religious people like to make money, too. So He did not check international rules and regulations, and that transmitter is probably still up there on the mountain.
Yes, because you are limited to 50,000 watts on the AM side. Yeah. No matter where you are.
This is AM, of course.
Yes. A quick aside here. Mark Churchill is reporting from Facebook and says, "Hi, guys. We will miss you, Ronald J." So thank you, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.
And here is a voice from our past, from Kate Payne via email. Hello from Des Moines, Iowa.
Oh, my.
So Kate left us not too long ago to seek her fortune in the Great Flatlands.
Yes, I wonder about the plains. It's awfully cold in Iowa. I worked in Iowa, too, for a few months.
Well, back at you, Kate. Sorry can't be there today to celebrate Ronald J., but I wanted to jot down a note that maybe y'all could include in the show. Congratulations, Ronald J. It has been such an honor to work with you as a colleague after growing up listening to you in the backseat of my mom's car.
Oh, boy. Jeez.
More than Carl Castle or Robert Siegel, you were the defining radio voice for me. You set the bar for dedication to your job and for presence behind the mic. You and your coastal weather outlooks will be sorely missed. Now enjoy your retirement. Love, Kate.
That's very nice. Yeah.
And you do have and we'll get into this on the other side of the break. It's rapidly bearing down on us. But I've always had a few little signature phrases and words that you incorporate into a lot of your presentation. I want to kind of tap into that on the other side here, too. If you want to say hi to Ronald J., our morning edition host here on WFSU-FM for the past 17 years and soon to be retiring from the airwaves, but certainly not from life, give us a call. 850-414-1234 is the local number, and you can send us an email, also perspectives@WFSU.org, into all of our friends on Facebook Live. Thank you so much for tuning in and seeing what we look like here.
Yeah.
They're leaving us in droves, Ron. I can feel them bailing out even as we speak right here. We'll be right back with a special edition of Perspectives right after this. We sort of transplanted Morning Edition here into Perspectives. Here we combine the programs. What do they call that in the radio biz? Convergence or something, Ronald J. Evans. So good to have you here with us and talk about some radio stuff. And we were going into the break talking about just some of the little catchphrases that you sometimes include. The thing that seems to intrigue people most is the way that you do the coastal weather outlook from the mouth of the Suwannee to Destin and out 60 nautical miles. But
it's funny because that's just the way the words flow, nautical miles, it's just, but they remind me, somebody first mentioned that there was a British television show, I think that we still carry it here at WFSU, as time goes by, and so they I think the parents of one of the main characters on it, they have a maid who listens to offshore radio or something, and they give the light chop, moderate chop in the coastal waters off of Britain. Remember that?
A connection to PBS, then,
There you go.
Well, the other thing we were talking about is not only the change in ownership that is just so endemic to the broadcast industry and has been since the very beginning, where you go in on a Monday and you have a new owner by Friday, a change of format, and everyone's out the door with no severance, no anything, but also the fact that unlike so many public perceptions of broadcast, that they see someone like, I don't know, Brian Williams or Don Lemon or one of the big media names today who have these multi-million dollar contracts. But small and medium market radio doesn't pay squat. And
most
people don't know that.
I often say when somebody recognizes me or something, and like I was writing a check the other day, and he said, "Oh, you're the guy in public radio." And I said, "Thank you very much. Yes, I am like that. And I always have the line, you can't take it to the grocery store, that recognition. It doesn't do a bit of good to you." So, no, we're not making any money.
No, but and even if you get now to the major markets, unless it is a highly news-centric operation, an all-news station.
But
like
not on radio time.
But it's not going to be to the level that TV would be.
Yeah, there is maybe 10 markets, New York, Chicago, that have all-news stations that pay well. I went up to WCBS for about 2 months during a strike, and the news director takes me out to have breakfast before I start, and we were working 12-hour shifts for 2 months. News producer in charge of the whole thing, and I knew nothing about New York. But anyway, so he takes me out to breakfast, and he tells me about how much money he's making, and then he tells me how much the morning news anchor was making. We're talking about 1989. The news anchor was making $300,000 a year, and he was making $90,000 as the news director. That's WCBS in New York. And 8 or 10 markets have all news stations like that, usually on the AM dial, 50,000-watt stations that pay well. But most radio jobs don't pay anything.
Yeah, but you were kind of the morning radio news voice in the Tampa Bay market for a number of years before you came up here.
Yeah,
and that was a little bit, I'm sure, better than Oshkosh or Peoria.
Yeah, 22 years, but again, you weren't paying much. You're not getting ahead of the game. Your wife had to work to keep the kids in clothing. You know, it's a great job. It's a great occupation, and you're constantly interested, and you're mentally stimulated. You know, they get a lot of free stuff. Management of radio stations, because news people never stop working. You get up in the morning and you start working, and just before you go to bed, you're checking all the news media, reading the Washington Post, New York Times, and everything like that. So you're getting about 14 hours a day, and you're getting paid for 8.
What a deal, as they would say in Managementville. Does it ever get easier, though, getting up at 3:30 in the morning?
No, but it's 4. I heard you say 3. It's 4. There's a big difference between 3 and 4 times. I've been getting up at 4 in the morning. I was thinking the other day, it's almost 62 years I've been in the business, and I would say 59 of those have been getting up in the morning at 4 o'clock. And maybe 5 sometimes in Peoria. I was signing the station on. I could manage to make it to East Peoria where the transmitter was and get it on at 6 o'clock. But it was always early in the morning, and I'm tired of it.
Let's see. Angry Noel from Facebook. Don't be angry. Be happy. What years were you in Buffalo? That's probably because that WKBW jingle was part of our little opening there. You never made it to Buffalo.
No, thank God I didn't make it to Buffalo. Enough snow in Peoria. In Peoria, when I say I was signing on the station, so I'm in Peoria, and I'm in a rooming house up there, second floor, a little private house, nice little studio apartment. And I had an old DeSoto, and so I had it parked on the street on a hill in the winter so that I could push it, jump it in, and, you know, put that clutch, you know, how you start it?
Jump start it.
Jump start it like that and make it over to East Peoria, Illinois. And to get there, you go across the river, and then you had a big hill to go up to get to where the station was located, and I can remember the icy roads trying to get up that hill with that old DeSoto.
Before the snow plows and the salt trucks were out
before,
and all.
Yeah, before they got out in the morning.
Well, after you left the Tampa Bay market, you were both at WDAE, which was a CBS O&O at the time, owned and operated station. You were at WSUN for a bit.
Tampa and St. Peter's.
Yeah. How'd you wind up in Tallahassee then?
Well, same old story, deregulation. I'm working at WSUN, second station in the market. I was there 22 years at two stations. Only left the first one because the ownership changed, and I saw the writing on the wall. You know these things in advance. The program director, somebody that wants to be news director from North or something when they take over the station. Anyway, I went to WSUN as the news director, and we had a pretty good news department, 7-8 people, newscast at 11 at night. It was a country station. That's when country stations, middle-of-the-road stations, we used to call, they have full news departments and had a pretty good commitment. Carried a 30-minute newscast along with Paul Harvey, 15 minutes of local, 15 minutes of Paul Harvey at noon every day. So we had a pretty good commitment to news. I was there, and deregulation had occurred, and I end up there through three ownerships. Taft Broadcasting, Shearing Plow was the first one. I believe they sold the station to put all their money. They had quite a group of stations, television as well, to put their money into a cancer drug, I believe.
Yeah, pharmaceutical, yeah, big company. Yeah.
So they sold it, Taft bought it. And then CBS bought it. Now, I thought, my, I'm set here. CBS has just bought the radio station. And I thought, well, I'm going to be here for a long time. CBS is a steady, stable commodity, and my future is secured. Well, after 2 years, they sold it. And it caught up with me. I got canned there at the CBS station. Yeah, that's how I ended up in Tallahassee. Some of these sales take a long time. Way back in Peoria, it was a whole year before, and we had no salesman in the street, no general manager, so we're all just, you know, sending out tapes trying to find a job back in 1960. And WSUN, it was the same situation. It went on for about 8 months before the sale was complete. And somebody, a woman, was listening to the radio station, and she and her cohorts had started a network in Tallahassee, a statewide network called Sunstar. And they were looking for a news director. So I had several meetings with her, and she offered me the job. That's how I ended in Tallahassee.
Oh, my gosh. So you were at the old WTNT AM, the change calls to WNLS then.
The Sunstar was at the Press Association Center.
Okay.
Yeah.
But when that went south, you moved over to John Knox Road, which
that
is where they
were. That went south in about a year. Mm-hmm. And as part of my duties at Sunstar was doing the news via satellite to WTNT. So I was doing their morning news as well as the network news, the statewide. We had 26 stations, soon went under. Then that WTNT offered me a job. Yeah.
And you were already on there, except that from down the street, the signal had to go up to the 23,000 miles to the satellite and back down, sort of taking the scenic route.
And there was a gap there. Yeah. There was a gap of 1.5 to 2 seconds all the time. So I was hearing the intro and then
hearing back yourself. Well, when you got to TNT and LS, you also, besides doing the morning news and all that, had an involvement on a talk show too, I believe, right?
Oh, the whole station. I wanted additional duties so I could make additional money. And I said, let me take over the AM. It was just sitting in the corner running network business news at the time. So we took it over, but I didn't have a budget. Money. So I I asked various people to come in and do shows, either one a week or two a week or something. We had people from the Senior Center come on, do an hour. Roosevelt Wilson of the Capital Outlook, he did an hour each week. And various other people that did it, who shall be nameless. We had all types of characters on there doing shows, and I, of course, would be there all the time wondering what's going to come out of some of their mouths next.
Well, we thought we would kind of tap back into the annals of history, because one of those shows was called The Uppity Woman with
Oh, yes.
And you remember the host of that program,
yes,
right?
Yes. talking about being on tender toes there, you know, wondering what's going to come out next.
Yes, well, a lady who also wound up being our mutual colleague here at WFSU for a while, and she went on to New Service of Florida and some other things. But when she was under your tutelage there out on John Knox Road doing the Uppity Woman Show, this was a segment that occurred right after the great shooting in 1994, the O.J. Simpson case. And the phone lines were open, and all of the regulars, and most talk shows do have regular callers that you hear week after week after week. But they had been just burning up the telephone lines, talking about how so often women falsify reports of abuse.
Oh, and
they're beating up on these poor innocent men, and this is how they exact their revenge. And this had been going on for quite some time. And finally, you couldn't take it anymore, and you jumped on the air in the middle of the show, and this is what you said.
Could you hang on for a second?
We have a problem here because he can't hear me down the line. But what they need to do is spend a Saturday night at the emergency room at Tallahassee Memorial and see a couple of women brought in there with the hell beat out of them like that. And then they'd see how many men have been taken in there on a Saturday night with their brains knocked out by a woman.
Thank you, Ron.
I mean, that puts it all in
perspective. Go ahead. do not remember that.
Okay. But that, again, you were able to take like 45 minutes of diatribe on the part of the callers and just distill that whole issue down to some very pithy words and put it in a context here. And that has also been one of your things over the years. People can rant for hours on end, and you'll come up with just the perfect summation in like two or three sentences.
That's very nice of you to say that, Tom.
Yes, but you have done that all of your life. It's a cut through the BS, I think some of us have referred to it as, Ron.
Good.
Nancy Helen Navarez Garcia from Facebook opines, love listening to him. And Sarah Jean Hargis, also from Facebook, saying, we love you, Ronald. And we do. We do indeed. So what are you going to do after you get out of here then? What plans do you have? Worldwide travel, you and new bride, still Cynthia, going to be doing some fascinating things or what?
Well, we purchased a house in Thomasville. Actually, it's a mile maybe south of the city limits, right off 319. We got a couple acres up there. We lucked out, Tom. You can't find this kind of property in Tallahassee. We looked for a long time in Tallahassee and elsewhere around the area and just luckily found this place simply by accident. And we're looking forward to it, doing some gardening and,
You got a nice spread up there. You do.
We do. Yeah. Oh, we'll invite you up. By the way, before I forget, I brought this package in here.
I have this instinctive distrust of plain brown bags. I don't know why.
Tom and I have been sharing peanut butter. And I'd bring in a jar 1 week. He'd bring in a jar in the next week. And lately I've been a little remiss because my wife makes me hot soup in the morning. Eating less. Cynthia's a wonderful woman.
And a wonderful cook.
I
can attest.
Anyway, so I thought, going away presents, I bring you a big jar of peanut butter.
And it's all natural.
That's right.
Peter Pan, there you go. This is the high-octane stuff, Ronald J. Thank you so much.
Enjoy. And leave it in your office now. Don't put it up there in the kitchen. Somebody else will take it.
Cosby Hayes, also from Facebook. I've listened to Ronald J. since I was a child. He will be sorely missed. Can we get a light to moderate chop from Ron?
I always like choppy.
Choppy. But the sound replicates what the actual C's are doing.
Sure.
You have that little.
Well, you know, we're all hams. And we're all. This is kind of half-assed acting, is what it is on the microphone or on television. The same thing. It's more on television because they have to look serious and they have to look at their partner and smile when they're doing a story or doing a serious story. One thing I don't like is people commenting after the story, you know. oh, isn't that sad? You know, just give the story. And
well, what do we call that? I think it's
making themselves part of the story.
Yeah, but it's also adjective creep that you have seen enter the parlance of newscasters, even on radio, but certainly on TV. We go now, this is a shocking story that, you know, shouldn't that be up to the people to decide whether or not it's shocking?
Then this morning I mentioned a bizarre story before I read a story coming out of Pensacola, so I...
That wasn't a value judgment. That was reality, Ron. That was pretty bizarre.
It was a bizarre story, yes. I suppose we should tell the people what we're talking about.
Yeah, go ahead, because you actually had the thing.
It's a technical school, technical college in Pensacola, and they got a call that two people were coming there, and they were going to shoot up the place. Well, a man and a woman showed up. They were armed, and one of them had some amphetamine in his pocket. And he was coming there, he said, to get a technical school, to get something, to find out what was in his ear that was rattling or something. He was worried about that. But, of course, they arrested him and everything and took him in, and he had priors.
Yes. I would imagine going in with amphetamine and guns and everything else. Yeah, it was not your standard kind of checkup. And certainly not the kind of place where you would go for that kind of checkup. Yeah. So, yes, it was bizarre. It was. You were right. Absolutely here. We're talking to Ronald J. Eben, both through Facebook Live and on WFSU-FM's Perspectives. You are invited to join the conversation at 850-414-1234 or zip us an email, perspectives@WFSU.org, and we'll be right back. Back on Perspectives, talking to Ronald J. as, oh my gosh, it's more than 17 years here doing Morning Edition on WFSU. And from Facebook Live via email, Karen Dix and Bill Behenna. You remember that name. Hi, Ron. I enjoyed reading the lengthy and wonderful article about you in the paper yesterday. Thanks to Marina Brown at the Tallahassee Democrat.
Yes, I want to thank her. She was very... flattering, I would say.
Great gal. Yep. Although I wish you the best in your deserved retirement. I will miss hearing you on the air in the mornings. You've been a great voice for WFSU. And Karen sending greetings again from Bill Behenna. He and I always loved seeing you at the station when we came to help out with the fundraising drives. One of the reasons we're so proud of WFSU and all it contributes to our community. All the best to you, Karen. And Bill had an association with this place too many years before that. I think he worked out here at WFSU.
I believe you're right, but there are so many people that... come and gone from here the last 17 years. We're pretty steady now in the news department, and I hope it remains that way. But for a long time, you know, I can't remember all the people over the last 17 years who've come through here.
Yeah, if you go out into the hallway and see all those plaques and
all
accolades and awards, think, my gosh, you know, there's James Call. He's at the Democrat right now. Let me see. Well, we could go on and on. We'll leave someone off, and then they'll get very angry at us. Hey, let's add Grace to the conversation here on line one. Hey, Grace, welcome to Perspectives.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Eben, I wanted to tell you how much I'm going to miss your wonderful golden age of radio voice.
Oh, my.
yours was the one that took us through World War II. And I just am going to miss it so much.
Well, I appreciate that. But I'm not that old. I was only 6 years old in World War II.
Well, true, but yours was the voice of Walter Cronkite and all of the wonderful golden age of radio greats.
Oh.
And I wonder, as I listen to you speak, of course, that's not how you speak naturally. So it was something you were trained for?
Well, yes, you develop a style over the years, and I'm sure early years you do mimic somebody else, but then you fall in your own pattern of what to do, how to
But you bring out a good point, though, Grace, because there used to be, you're right, there was
a
way that you would speak on the radio.
In fact, I got demoted one time because I was too stentorian. You sound like too much like Walter Cronkite. This was 72, 73, around there. So I said, okay. They didn't cut my pay, so I stayed around.
But thank you so much. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that, Grace. But that era, again, when the formality that had been a part of broadcasting since the very beginning. Okay, here is how we sound on radio or TV. That's gone now. And if you listen to just about any
it's radio more conversational now than it was. I'm more conversational now than I was. Believe me. you have such tightly time periods. You know, it's to the fraction of a second. See, much of what we do here is automated in the morning, and so you have to. You have to be right on it, or you're going to be clipped at the end. So that you can't fool around too much with the style.
But we always try to push it and get a little bit more don't we?
Oh, sure.
Charles Futch, a name that we both know very well, Ronald J. from Facebook, enjoyed listening to you back in the days of WDAE in the Tampa Bay market.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Charles was down there. And from our own staff, Mike Plummer over on WFSU-TV. Good stuff, Tom and Ronald J. And, I worked with Mike at 27. We were talking about that during the break. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a very incestuous little broadcast group here in Tallahassee.
Yes, and yet there's still a lot of turnover. Not so much for WCTV, but many of the stations still have a lot of turnover.
Yeah, but in radio, if you go into some of the commercial operations now, after morning drive, which still, that's the big money time period where you have, if you're going to have live people, you're going to have them in the morning.
Yeah, that's true.
But then after, say, about 10 o'clock, you can go into some of these stations, and like our master control, it's just the computers clicking out the events automatically.
Hardly a human being in the place.
Exactly.
We had, I remember when they first went to buying a lot of stations, we had five in Tallahassee, and we had one guy overnight, and one of the stations was going into a repeat thing on the air, and so people called, you know, the police and said, what's going on over there? And so all of a sudden the policeman is looking in the window of all these windows, four windows down there of radio stations, you know, see what's going on, is somebody dead on the microphone or something? It was just a technical problem. And one guy on overnight for five radio stations, he went down to check on something of his in the car, something that he was wanted to get, and he locked himself out. And so he's trying to get back in, knowing that the radio station is just playing repeat over and over.
Yeah, or the old days when your record would run out.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you still have radio nightmares about that?
Well, I think I was in a little station in Kewaunee, Illinois, after a year I had enough of this and I went back to school. And I was coming back. I actually did color on a high school basketball game there in the Quad Cities. And I'm driving back and listening to the station, and he's got a 45 on that's jumping, you know, going back and repeating the same thing over. And we sat there and listened for about 30 minutes. This 45 jumped back and repeat the same line over and over and over, just laughing our head off. Yeah, you do have nightmares about that. You cannot take a chance and be out long. Out of the control room.
Yeah, there was an interesting, speaking of Facebook Live, hi guys, there was a conversation amongst some of the old Tallahassee broadcasters on Facebook just the other night of, do you still have nightmares where your record is running down?
Sure.
And you could see the needle that shows the sound levels getting further and further to the left, and it's going to run out, and you run to the control board, and everything has changed.
Yeah.
You don't know how to turn on the microphone, and there's going to be dead air, and you're going to be in so much trouble. Plumber's jumping back in on Facebook. Where did the pause before Panama City come from?
Well, that's a crutch. You know, you got the station ID, and you got a little weather. It depends upon it. It's different every hour. But you have a little weather, and you have a station ID, and I would look at the clock, and I would say, pause a second until Panama City would come right before the network.
Just to pause. That's your old disc jockey instinct there.
Sure.
You're going to get everything in before the singer begins singing.
That's right.
Well, you had mentioned at least four or five times in the course of our chat here, Ron, deregulation back during the era of President Reagan, when there used to be something called the Fairness Doctrine that most people misinterpreted anyway. They thought that that meant that you had to give all sides. No, it was only for federal political candidates, but that's a different story. But things have changed in broadcasting. For the better, for the worse, what do you think?
Well, I think it's for the worse. I think the head of Clear Channel Radio.
Yeah, Lowry Mays.
They start talking about deregulation. I think he appeared on Capitol Hill, telling everybody how all his stations had about how many stations they had back then.
Ultimately, I think they had something like 1,200 out of 10,000 stations.
And he's saying, "I got all these stations. We'll have all this expertise and all this personnel, and the quality of the program will be better. There'll be more news and public affairs." Well, the opposite occurred. I mean, I can recall a meeting I had when CBS took over, and we had seven people in the news department at WSUN. The guy, George Sasson was his name. He said, "We're going to have to cut the news department down to two." And I, without thinking, said, "Well, you're not going to have much of a news department." They use a profanity. And he said, "The meeting's over."
Meeting adjourned,
yeah.
Because at one time, even when you were growing up in places like Appleton and Oshkosh and went to Peoria and all that, even a 1,000-watt AM station.
Local news.
Had local news.
Oh, absolutely. Used to go down to the police station in Kewanee, Illinois, and look over the police blotters. And, you know, you still had connections to the community, not just one record or CD or whatever they run now. They run up music off computers now. I'm a Luddite. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's a server somewhere that has all the content, as we call it. Now, everything is content, of course. But at the same time, there are more and more meetings of broadcasters, whether it's on the commercial side or like the one our own Lynn Hatter just attended down in Gainesville, where you get public radio folks together. And there seems to be a growing recognition that those stations that refocus on their community and what's going on there may be more successful over the long haul than those that don't.
I think so. I think you're right. Now, I really think that didn't Clear Channel, what do they call it? They call it
It's iHeart now.
iHeart now. Well, they just filed for financial restructuring. I mean, that's the end of the line. They cut back on everything. They made everything coming from San Antonio, or there's nothing local anymore. And the end result is people aren't listening. And, of course, young people don't listen to commercial radio anymore. They got, earbuds in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We have, another email came in, from Facebook. Evan says, "Commercial music radio uses automation software to play the music." Although, again, full disclosure, we do have an automation system that plays our content with the exception of our local news breaks and programs like this that you're listening to right now, or when we do our this is fine. You'll have to come back for this. See, you can come back now as an independent political commentator when we do our election coverage.
Really?
Yes.
Do I get paid?
This is public radio. Are you insane? Come
on. Guy's got to try.
Well, you got to try, that's for sure. But, yeah, you could come back and lend your expertise, what you have seen over the years, all the changes, especially in local politics and state-level stuff and all, and just come back
Certainly.
And say, hey, that's – so, but, you know, we always make that, I think, whatever station we work at, to tell departing staff members that you always have a home back here, but you certainly do.
Well, I feel that way. I really didn't want to retire. You know, I just got exhausted with getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning. And my wife said to me, it's past time, Ronald. Really? Yeah, and it is. I mean, I'll be 81 on May 22nd.
Yeah, but a vibrant and still enthusiastic and, in relatively good shape, man. You're in better shape than I am in many ways. So come on.
Well, thank you. And I think it's keeping the mind going. Of course, you got to exercise on a regular basis. You got to keep active physically. But keeping your mind interested, and read have great conversations with Tom when you get up in the morning.
Yeah, but the other thing is going to be using that example, kind of pushing it down the line, because we talked about this before we went on the air. Never before has it been easier for the average person to do the kind of research that we do in news every day.
Right. There is no excuse for ignorance anymore. I mean, we were watching the Kennedy thing on CNN the other day, and I said something about they thought maybe Cook County was had something to do with, the elections there and whether Kennedy won or not. And I said maybe it has more to do with Eisenhower's news conference when he said, when they asked him a question about what he could think of some policy that Nixon had something to do with, and he said, well, give me a couple of days, maybe I can figure it out. Well, so and then right away I Googled it, and there is Eisenhower who is saying, give me a week.
Ah.
And maybe. So there's no excuse for that, You have to be careful about the news sites you go to, though.
Yeah, because, as we found out through Mark Zuckerberg's testimony before Congress, there are algorithms there that can keep us, if we are not careful, keep us within our bubble so that we have these self-reinforcing attitudes and outlooks.
And that goes for liberal as well as conservative. I think it happens. You talk to each other. You talk to same-thinking people all the time. It's not good.
No. And let's see. Let's go to line one. I think we have a colleague on the line. Hey, Frank.
Hey, Tom. How's it going? Hey, Ronald Jay.
Hi.
Hey, I just wanted to say that I've enjoyed listening to you over the years before I worked at WFSU, and my mom loves listening to you. She's legally blind, so she really gets a lot of entertainment out of WFSU, and she told me she's going to be very sad when you're gone, and as we all will be, I think. And thanks for doing such an awesome job and making WFSU a great place.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And we appreciate all your efforts on behalf of keeping the the photons coming out of that big old tower there, Frank, because without you and the other folks in development, we would not be talking right now.
That's right.
Yeah. We couldn't do it without you guys. It's a quality programming you put out. So thank you all.
Thanks so much. Appreciate that, Frank. Here is, let's see. David Mullins, Tom, and Ron. Such fun this morning. Our staff is certainly going to miss Ronald. What will Ron miss the most about his time at WFSU? Besides the peanut butter, of course.
Of course. Yes. By the way, I'm really into peanut butter. I mean, I'll be 81 next month. I can still run a mile, much slower than I used to. But peanut butter.
It's protein.
It's protein.
Yeah.
Right? Anyway, what was the question again?
Okay, what would you miss most?
What would I miss the most? Your company, Tom, honestly. I mean, the conversations we have in the morning or when I'm leaving at 12 o'clock, Tom will follow me out to the car and we're talking.
I'm bugging the heck out of him. He wants to get out of here.
Yeah. Actually, that's true. I like a lot of what the job. If the job started at 9, I'd probably still be doing it.
Maybe we can rearrange the schedule here. Another former colleague of ours from our sister operation a while back, the Florida Channel, Tigger Gray. Great guy. Let's see. Like a pro, I see you have one earmuff half off so your ear can hear what's up outside the broadcast. And Ron, do you still have your radio license?
No, I don't. Was it third class?
Broadcast endorsement.
That's right. Well, those days are out the window.
Yeah.
I can remember at DAE where we had engineers on at the transmitter are on the clock.
Yeah.
On the clock, and they change the regulations and saved a lot of money for owners of radio stations.
Well, Ron, I think we have to call this one a wrap, or as we say in the broadcast biz here, and thank you for all the years of service, and thank you for being you. That's the most important thing.
Thank you, Tom. I enjoyed it.
A reminder, you can always find us online at WFSU.org, and we will have that program up for you shortly. And thanks to our crew who provided our Facebook Live connection this morning from WFSU-TV, Paul Dam, Suzanne Smith, Brandy Staney, Elena Sims, Shannon McDowell, Kayla Gaffney, and John Manson-Hing, Emma Wilson, and posting it all to Facebook Live and WFSU.org, Tricia Moynihan. Next week, we're going to be talking about greenways and trails, all that and more. Coming up right here on Perspectives. I'm Tom Flanagan. Have a great week.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.